Parshas Tezria, Perek Yud Beis Pasuk Vav, Vimlos Yemei Tara, Living in the Last. We talk about in the beginning of the Parsha when a woman gives birth, what ends up happening. Well, after those days are up, the days of Tahara for the son or the daughter, Tavi Keves Ben Shnaso Leola, she brings a lamb, a year old, as an Ola, Uben Yona Otur L'Chatos, and either a Ben Yona or a Tur. I don't know how to translate this. A Ben Yona might be a pigeon or a turtle dove. A Tur is the other thing. L'Chatos. He brings that as a Chatos. El Pesach Ol Moed Ola Kohen. He brings it to the Pesach Ol Moed, the opening of the Ol Moed, to the Kohen itself. That's what it says. He brings a Keves and a Ben Yona, etc. I'm skipping Pasuk Zayin, but Pasuk Ches. The Imlo Simsiyah the day said, she can't afford a sheep. She brings two turim, two those turtle doves, two pigeons, one for an ola, one for a chatas. And then she gets a kapara, and she's tahor. So what in the world is going on here? A woman just gives birth. She goes through all the pains of childbirth and everything that goes through. And her thought process is, now that I just gave birth to a baby, I have to bring a chatas, a sin offering? For what? What did I do wrong? An ola is brought for illicit thoughts, for bad thoughts that a person might have, or being over on a mitzvah saseh, on a positive commandment. What in the world did this person do wrong? How in the world is this something that we look at and we're saying, oh, of course, she's chayiv in a chatas, she's chayiv in ola. What did she do? She gave birth to a child. That should be something we should celebrate, not sit there and knock her down and say, yeah, but you got to bring a korban for it, or two korbanos for it. Even if it's just two birds, if she's poor and she can't afford a keves, nonetheless, that's still a lot for doing something there. And in fact, the Ibn Ezra says in Pasuk Ches that if the kohen isn't mechaper for it, if the kohen doesn't bring this, these korbanos, she never becomes tahor. She's tameh for the rest of her life after giving birth to a baby. It's so serious that if she doesn't bring these korbanos, she doesn't become tahor ever again. Something's wrong here. Something has to be wrong because there's no way that can be taken at face value. So the Das Zakenim, the Balei Tosfos say, this word kapara does not mean atone. It means cleanse. There's no real sin for her to atone for. There's no atonement that's needed over here. Hashem is cleansing her. So even though it's called a chatas and an ola, these korbanos are really a cleansing idea to make her into a brand new person, as if she's now totally new, to make her feel good. Listen, you went through all these things over here. You went through childbirth, which is really hard. So now, here, this is what you have to do. And he brings ideas, examples of this idea, where one after the other he shows that chatas does not have to be for a sin offering. If you bring one, there could be something else involved as well, a cleansing process instead of just a sin itself. This Sforno says, up until now, her thoughts have been about making herself tahor. She'd had dam, blood that had come from the childbirth itself, that had been in her system for so long. It's been difficult for her to think about anything else. She's been thinking about that part of her body and those things that need a refuah shlema, and she's been trying to get herself better and better and better and heal her until she can get all better. It's been a while. Her mind can finally concentrate on things that are kadosh. Up until now, it's been like, well, whatever I can do, I can do. I can't do other things. Now she can concentrate on kedusha and do things that are awesome. Says the Sforno, that's the idea. She can have proper korbanos and do things that are proper to make it work. It's really an amazing thing. The Ramban says that a woman who gives birth has such a weak constituency and a body that's just missing something, very, very, very off, we'll call it, that this is what she needs a kapara for. She needs a kapara to strengthen herself, to eventually become taller again, to make herself into a stronger person, to make herself perfectly healed. And this korban, therefore, is something that's all about the healing. It's all about the refuah shlema she's supposed to get. All of that was like another way of looking at it. She didn't do anything wrong. She's just bringing a chatas and ola to renew herself, to make herself better, to make herself give her a refuah shlema. All those are there. But then comes the other Rishon. The Ibn Ezra says she does need a kapara. What does she need a kapara for? When a person is in extreme pain, they might think or say things that they don't really mean. They might say things like you might do in a fight against somebody else. You might say something that you never really meant to say. You might even think things that you don't even really mean to think. You don't want to think this way. You don't have to say these things. But anybody who's married knows that at a certain point you might say something or think something that you didn't really mean or think. It's because everything's going on around you. You've got so many things going on, right? There's so many things happening. You might have said it improperly without even thinking. And all of a sudden you're like, oh, wait, I never meant to say that in the first place. Says Ibn Ezra, this woman thought terrible thoughts. This woman said terrible things. We don't know what they are, and it doesn't really matter, says Ibn Ezra. It doesn't matter what they were. There's nothing specific. She just wasn't thinking properly. She wasn't saying things properly. She's got to bring a chatas and ola. Chatas for the thought process, the ola for the actual speech that was there. That's what she's got to do. The Ramban says it's actually Gemara Nida, Lamed Aleph Amabez, where the Gemara says that a woman who wants to give birth will often say, I never want to be with my husband ever again. I swear, she says, that I don't want to be together with my husband ever again. And that shvua, even though it's not really upheld, obviously she has responsibilities to her husband, but nonetheless, the fact that she said it or even thought it is needs a kapara. She needs to do something. So a chatas, and this is almost like chesed and rachamim from above, that Hashem annuls the shvua. It's like she never said it in the first place. But there's a chatas because she said something else. There's an ola because of the thought process involved. So it's explaining the Ibn Ezra through that Gemara and Nida, Laman Aleph Amabez, of what could happen, and therefore it's there. I personally, my wife is a tzedekes, I never heard anything like this from her. It's also because I'm an awesome husband. But I never heard anything like this from her when she was giving birth. And Baruch Hashem, it's been a couple times, a little bit more than a couple, right? And nonetheless, it's there. But I can imagine that the amount of pain that a woman goes through during this could cause her to have that. And says, Ramban, so get rid of it completely. Just get rid of it. There's no reason for there to be even a vestige of something wrong. Get rid of it by her saying, I guess these types of korbanos, that gets rid of it completely. The Surah Mor points out, this is for sure not a real shvua. When you say something out of extreme pain, it doesn't even count in the first place. You don't even need to be matur nidarim. You don't need ataris nidarim in such a case. She didn't mean it. She never meant it. And if you would ask her afterwards, she said, I don't even remember saying it. Says the Torah Mor, you don't have to worry about such and like that. But kapara is still necessary. Why not? Why not do a kapara? Because you never know. When somebody goes through that amount of pain, why not do a kapara? Darash Moshe says even more so, this is a time, childbirth, where you should be more careful about things. We know, chas v'shalom, there are three things that could cause a person to die during childbirth. If they're not careful about Hilchos Nida, Hilchos Chala, Hafrosh Chala, or Adlakas and Ner on Shabbos, if they're not careful about those three things, women can die during childbirth. It could be that it kills them, that they actually die during childbirth. To get around that, and I don't mean to say that to get around it, but to make sure that those things were taken care of. And not only that, but for her to be even more careful, she should go into childbirth almost with a year of fear of a Kadosh Baruch Hu saying like, Oyvei, a Kadosh Baruch Hu, I hope I did everything right. But instead, she swore not to be together with her husband. How could she have done that, says Rav Moshe Feinstein? How? This is a time when she should have been more careful, and she's not. For that, she needs a kapara. Not for what she said. For the fact that she wasn't doing tshuva. And again, it's a hard thing to say to anybody who's given birth, to anybody who's going through that type of pain. But the idea behind it is just that. Yet Sifas Yehuda wonders about the specifics of that gemara. This is a question that was asked by the Talmidim, the Rishim Bar Yochai. Rishim Bar Yochai was asked this by his own Talmidim. Why in the world does this woman need a kapara? What did she do wrong? And Rishim Bar Yochai said, chatas for what she said, and an ola for what she thought, etc., and stuff like that. But he says the words, b'shah shekoras leilad, at the time when she bends down to give birth, which is weird. That's not while she's giving birth. It's when she's starting to give birth, when she's still in the contraction stage and her body is getting used to getting ready to have a baby, that's when she swears. Where the pain is right there, that's when she swears. Now we're actually there. Says that Teres Yudin, at Sifas Yudin, it's an amazing idea. This Rav Shim Bar Yochai Lishitaso. Rav Shim Bar Yochai holds Ein Isser Chalal Isser. Ein Isser Chalal Isser means that if I'm in the middle of one thing that's Usser, I can't add on another Isser to what I already have. If a woman is a woman is an achos isha, she's the sister of my wife, and then she marries another man. So there's an ashes isha as well. Ein isser chalal isser. Achos isha is the actual isser, and ashes ish is adding on, but it doesn't really add on. There's only achos isha here, there's not ashes ish. Do you get what I'm saying? Ein isser chalal isser, you can't have that. So too over here, Shemba Yochai says, if she's already usser because she's a nida, and during childbirth a woman turns into a nida, anis or chalalisser, she can't usser herself to her husband. She can't say, my husband should be forbidden to me forever. She can't make a neder to say I'm never going to be with my husband ever again. Ein iser chalal iser. The neder will never work because she's already usher to her husband right now. So the neder won't work. When will the neder work? Only when she's koras leilid, where she's not yet in that stage. She's not yet Anita, where she's still almost about to give birth, in pain, but not yet giving birth. Then, where there's no iser yet, she could say, my husband is usher to me. That's why we say it's specifically Rosh Hashanah Bar Yochai, and it's specifically Bishasha Karas Leilig. Yeah. Oh, we're going to get to it. The Rabbeinu Bechaya, you know what? I'll get to it right now. The Rabbeinu Bechaya. The Rabbeinu Bechaya says, Puru Ravu, you mean? She doesn't have a mitzvah. But the guy does. The guy does. That makes it a little bit different. So there is a little bit of difference when the woman doesn't have the chiyuv to do it, right? So therefore, because she doesn't have a chiyuv to put herself in danger, this is danger of life and death, she doesn't have the chiyuv to do so, and therefore it's a little bit different. Not entirely, but a little bit different. The Rabbeinu Bechaya cannot believe there was any real chayt here that would require her to have a kapara. Just think about that. What did she do wrong? What in the world? Says the Rabbeinu Bechaya, it can't be. And the fact that she might have said something, but what if she didn't? What if she gets up and she says, I didn't say it? She still has to bring a chatzos and an ola. Torah says you got to bring a chatzos and an ola. But why? She didn't say anything. So what in the world are we making her do? She gets up and she says, I don't remember saying anything like that. I know I didn't say something like that. Let's say we have a video that says shows she didn't say anything like it. But still she has to bring it. Says Rabbeinu Bechaya, it has nothing to do with her. It has to do with Chava. Her foremother Chava was the reason why she's bringing these korbanos. And listen to what he says. Had she not sinned, then mankind would have given birth to children without taiva. Now think about this for a second. Do trees give birth without any issues whatsoever? Of course. They have seeds that come out of nowhere. They grow on trees. There's no taiva involved at all. No desire by trees. But the seeds are born, and they're flying all throughout the world. There are different ways that trees spread their fruits, spread their seeds throughout the entire world. And there's no worries whatsoever. There's no taiva, there's no bad things regarding that. Says the Rabbeinu Bechaya, that's the way we would have been if not for Chava's sin. If Chava wouldn't have eaten from the tree and then convinced other Marishan to eat from the tree, it would have been, we would have been like trees. No taiva involved. There would have been seeds automatically that were planted in the ground, and everything would have been awesome. You wouldn't have had any problems at all. It would have been a natural occurrence, which could have happened in any which way, and there would have been no problems. The awesomeness behind this, she sinned. She did something that was wrong. And therefore, because of that, there was almost like a rot that went into the world because of it. She requires a kapara, not the woman who's giving birth. Chava requires a kapara for every woman that goes through the pain of childbirth. Any woman that goes through, Chava needs a kapara because it's because of her. Be'etzev til divanim, in sadness you'll give birth to children, was a curse given because of what Chava did. It was given to her and all of her children, meaning any woman that comes from Chava is going to be part of this, so to speak, original sin. And therefore, because she looked at the tree and she wanted to eat from it, there's the ola, the thought process of wanting to eat from the tree. Because she took from the tree, batikach ha'isha me'a'etz, she took from the tree, she did a ma'isa, she gets a korban chatas. We're not bringing the chatas and ola for the woman giving birth, we're bringing the chatas and ola for Chava originally. Isn't that crazy? We're doing it for Chava, and every time it's for Chava, every single time, over and over and over again, it's for Chava itself. The Rabbeinu Bechaya even tries to explain Rashi this way, which is whatever, but that's that, yeah. Yeah. Every woman is bringing it for the foremother Chava, for their grandparents. Think of it as you're sitting there like, I know why this happened to me. I know I went through, and my kapara is, I went through it, and Chava, this is for you. You're my foremother. I know it didn't mean to happen this way. You didn't want it to happen this way, but I'm doing this for you. And therefore, the woman is giving it willingly, not because of herself, because Chava needs it. That's the idea behind it. The Tiferet Zonason explains, based on this Rabbeinu Bechaya, the reason for the Korban Ola is because Chava thought she could be equal to Hashem. Just like Hashem is a God and creates, I can be a God and create, said Chava. I can be privy to the secrets of the world. And the Chatas, because she was together with the Nachash. We all know that there was an illicit relationship. It probably was not physical. We're dealing with a spiritual illicit relationship between her and the snake, where the Gemara says that Nachash was Baal Chava. And therefore, because of that, she brings a chatas for that sin as well. And specifically a bird that we'll talk about soon, has no idea of losing its mate, doesn't want to lose its mate. Specifically, that bird is given over, says the Rabbeinu Sanayipshitz, based on that idea. There's a kliyakir here, it's a pretty obvious one, we're going to skip it for right now. The Balaturim says that the two birds, Tur and Ben Yonah, whenever they appear throughout the entire Torah, whenever you have a Tur and a Ben Yonah, it's always the Tur mentioned first. Tur uBen Yonah. Tur uBen Yonah. Now, if you think about it, that makes a lot of sense, right? The Tur is an adult. The Ben Yonah is a child. The Tur is the turtle dove. I don't know. Again, I don't know how to translate them. The Ben Yonah is the son of the pigeon, the younger pigeon. So you get the older one before the child. Throughout the whole Torah, it's like that, except here in Pasuk Vav. And if you look, Pasuk Vav, it says Ben Yonah O Tur. And in Pasuk Ches, it goes back, Shtei Torim O Shnei Ben Yonah. Tur before the Ben Yonah again. Why in Pasuk Vav is it the opposite way as it is the entire Torah? And the Baal HaTurim says something absolutely unbelievable. He says that, okay, when you have a lamb for an Ola, you always want to bring that first. Obviously, you're going to bring the lamb. But you only bring one bird with it. The Tur is a worse bird to bring than the Ben Yonah. Why? Because a Tur sticks with its mate for life. A Tur will stay with its one mate for life. And if one of the mates dies, meaning if the male dies, the female will never remarry ever again. If the female dies, the male will never remarry ever again. It's a loyal bird that only has that one zug. So if you can only kill one, so what should you do? Take the Ben Yonah instead of the Tur. You get it? Because you take the Ben Yonah, they're not as loyal. So you take one Ben Yonah, it's not that big of a deal. The Tur, however, if you take the Tur, you're killing the mate for the rest of its life. You're not just killing one, it's like you're killing two. But at the end, in Pasuk Ches, how many birds are you bringing in Pasuk Ches? Two. Two Turim or two Ben Yonah. If you're going to bring two, Turim come first. Turim come first. And the reason why is simple, because again, you're killing the bird and its mate. You're taking both of them together, yeah.
Wouldn't killing two be effectively killing four? Unless you make sure...
No, meaning it would have to be, you're right. You're 100% right. It would be two, which you know are the mates of one another. And I guess those who raised Turim would make sure that they themselves wouldn't want that to happen, because then they wouldn't be able to have more birds. They would make sure to give you mates together with one another, and that's why Turim come before the Bnei Yonah. I think that's the way it would go. That's an unbelievable Bala Turim. In Pasuk, so the idea behind it is also increases, Chav Ches, it mentions the stira, Tur o Ben Yonah, Ben Yonah o Tur. It mentions, like, why do we mention this one before the other? And increases, it says in Chav Ches of an Aleph, to tell you that they're equal to one another. You could do either one, they're just as chashuv. That's not a stira to the Baal HaTurim. They're just as chashuv as one another. When there are two of them, right, when there are two of them, then Eina Chanami, the Turim, can come before the Ben Yonah. If there's one of them, though, the Ben Yonah should go first because of the specialty that the Tur has over here. It's interesting. Chaim Kanievsky says that the Talmid Akra, in Talmid Akra, he says a Tur is more expensive than a Ben Yonah. And that should be obvious. The Tur is an adult bird. The Ben Yonah is a tiny little bird. So the Tur is more expensive. So we specifically say, when you're rich, right, you can bring either one. So the order is specifically Ben Yonah O Tur. A rich man can still be Yotze even if he brings a smaller bird. When you're poor, you can even bring the wealthier bird, the bird that's worth more, the two Turim. That's the idea that Rechaim Kanievsky says. When we're dealing with a rich guy, we mention Ben Yonah first. When we're dealing with a poor guy, we mention the Turim first. That's another issue. Ayelas HaShachar proves from over here. He says, this is interesting. Doesn't that prove that Tsar Balei Chaim is D'oraisa? Do you know what Tsar Balei Chaim is? You're not allowed to hurt an animal. There's a big shaila in the Gemara in Baba Metzia. Is Tsar Balei Chaim D'oraisa or D'rabbanan? I don't mean like we're not on like PETA level where they're equal to human beings. I mean, are you allowed to give pain to an animal for no reason other than paining the animal? Right? If you have to give pain to the animal, to shecht it, you can shecht an animal. Everybody agrees with that. But are you allowed to give pain to an animal for no reason whatsoever? So we know the answer is no. It's usur. You cannot give pain to an animal stam. You can't do that. Okay, but is it d'oraisa? Is it a din from the Torah that you can't do that? Or is it a din d'rabbanan? Is it only a din from the rabbis themselves? Which one is it? From here, says Rabbi Bachaya, the Ayala Shachar, Revayale Steinman, it should prove from here that it's Dil Raisa. Because we're telling you to take a Ben Yonah before the Tur. Why take a Ben Yonah before the Tur? So that the Tur doesn't lose its mate. That's Tsar Balei Chaim. And we're fine with that. It seems to be a proof from the Torah that Tzar Bala Chaim is Deoraisa. Now, it's not a great proof. The Gemara in Bamitzia obviously doesn't bring it for this reason. But it is an interesting idea that brings down over here. And it is interesting. He goes the other way around. He says there's some good character traits to learn from over here. The good character traits from these birds that we're learning from are that they are loyal. Maybe the Ben Yonah isn't as loyal, but it seems to be loyal, at least. Yeah, as...
Why don't we learn from Shlach HaKelim where we have to send away the mother bird?
Specifically, the Gemara says over there that you can't say, are we more Rachmanim than HaKadosh Baruch Hu? And plus, it does seem a little cruel. If you think about it, tell somebody that you got to send away the mother bird so you can take its kids. That does sound somewhat cruel to most people who listen to it, unless you need the eggs, unless you need the birds. But Shiloh HaKain is, even if you don't need the eggs, if you don't need the birds, you can go ahead and send away the mother bird. So it sounds like it's somewhat cruel. So I wouldn't use that as an example of Tzar Bala Chaim Deoraisa, although the Gemara does bring that up in Bava Metzia over there, I think it's Chav Beis, where it does bring it up. It's just not a great example because there are interesting ways of looking at it, the Rachmanus of HaKadosh Baruch Hu when it comes to that.
Isn't this a riot that's talking about?
You can in the end, oh, I hear what you're saying, because you can in the end take the tour. Oh, that's a great call. I didn't think of that. Yeah, that's a great call. Tzar Bala Chaim is not necessarily Deoraisa, because in the end, you could take the other bird. You could take the tour. Let me think about that. That's really good. That's actually a really, really good point. Otzer Plos, the Torah says, listen to this Gemara. We just said, which one? The tour stays with its mate. The Ben Yonah doesn't necessarily stay with its mate. So take the Ben Yonah over the tour, right? In the Gemara in Erevin, Daf Kuf Amud Beis, it says, if we didn't have the Torah, we would learn all good character traits from different animals. So for example, we'd learn to be, you know, a hard worker from an ant. We'd learn that. We'd learn other things. We'd learn tznius from a cat, how to be tsnua from a cat itself. It says we would learn loyalty to our mates and arias, to stay away from evil, illicit relations, from the Yonah. From the Yonah, not from the tour. From the Yonah, we stay together, says Rashi, because the Yonah never marries another bird if it loses its mate. Doesn't say the tour. Says the Yonah always stays with the same bird. Okay, that's an amazing thing. The Zohar and the Rokeach say that's the reason why that bird is chosen to go onto the Mizbeach. Why is the Ben Yonah on the Mizbeach? Because it's loyal to its mate. It has a great character trait. It's loyal to its mate. Therefore, you put it on top over there. So it sounds like it's at least the Ben Yonah, maybe the Tur, but the Bala Turim just told us, Turim stay with their mates, not the Ben Yonah. That's why you take the Ben Yonah first. So what do you do over here? So I don't have a great answer over here. There is a Psikta Zutrasi that seems to say the opposite, that the Ben Yonah, not the Tur. But I think it's kind of obvious, isn't it? We're dealing with Yonah and a Ben Yonah. Doesn't it make somewhat sense that the Yonah is the one that might stay with its mate, but you don't bring a Yonah on the Mizbeach? What bird do you bring on the Mizbeach? A Ben Yonah. A Ben Yonah is so young, it doesn't yet have a mate. You get the idea behind it? The tour has a mate, the Ben Yonah doesn't. So if I have a choice between a tour and a Ben Yonah, choose the Ben Yonah, because the tour has a mate and the Ben Yonah doesn't. If it was a Yonah and a tour, it wouldn't matter. The Yonah and the tour are the same. But a Ben Yonah and a tour, choose a Ben Yonah over the tour, because the Ben Yonah doesn't have a mate, but the tour does. I think that's an obvious answer as to how it works over here. There's Ramban in the beginning of Parshas Vayikra that says something specific over there, and the Meshech Chochma says clearly over here that this woman who swears she doesn't want to be with her husband, she makes that shvuah and says, I don't want to be with my husband ever again. And she says something like that, that Meshech Chochma says, that's the reason why she brings these birds. Because these birds show you cannot do anything. Even if something happens, you can't give up on your mate. Even if Chas V'Shalom, the mate dies. If the husband or the wife passes away, you should never get married ever again. Says the Meshech Chochma, we learn from these birds to be as loyal as possible, up until a point, obviously. But there's as loyalty that stays there for so long, and we learn it from here, that this woman is going to bring this instead of making such a shvuah. That's the idea behind it. He then brings down something really strange, the Meshech Chochma. He says, it could be that she's really supposed to bring a korban tod over here, and she's brought up something else entirely. It's really strange to say such a thing, because the korban tod is a totally different korban, and it's something a little bit different. It's a really, really interesting Meshech Chochma, and he brings it down. Okay, whatever. It's not for right now. It's really out of thanks. and it's an ola nechatus, but it's really like a toda, giving thanks for having the childbirth be a healthy childbirth. It's a weird Meshech Chochma, and the Sefer HaChinuch brings it down as well. There is a Sefer Chassidim. Sefer Chassidim wrote down in his additional tzavos, in the will, in number 8. I don't know if anyone's seen this before. You should not raise Turim or Bnei Yonah inside your house. Do not own pigeons, and do not own turtle doves, and raise them inside your house. Anybody ever heard that before? Anybody ever heard that you shouldn't have birds inside your house? You shouldn't have raised birds inside your house, like cockatiels, cockatoos, etc.? It's a big shiloh. My kids have wanted a cockatiel for a long, long time. My wife grew up with one in her house, but it's brought down in the Sevos of Rabbi Yehuda Chassid not to have a tur in Ben Yonah. There's a shiloh in the poskim if that applies to all pet birds or it only applies to these turim ubnei Yonah. The question is really why. The shiloh is afarksana, I don't even know what this is, afarkisa d'aniya, which is brought down in the Sefer Chassidim written by, put together by Moshe Rav Kook, Reb Reuven Margolius. He brings down the Sefer that it's only these two birds. You can have any other bird inside your house aside from these two. So you could have any other bird, like parrots or, you know, any of these other birds, no problem. And the reason why is because they're the korbanos of poor people. So it's like a sign that you're going to become poor. But it's interesting, Reb Shimon Sofer in his Chuvas, who's one of the grandsons of the Chassam Sofer, says, you can make a shovach for them. Keep them outside. It just means in your house you can't have anything. But outside you can have them and it's not a problem as long as you keep them out. That you're allowed to do. That you would be allowed to do. I don't know if anybody's ever heard this before, but it is brought down in the Savos of Yudah Chassid not to own these birds in the house. And it could be because of this, right, because of this over there. Okay, we have one more thing that we want to go into that's a little bit different. At the Rashi tells us that the Kohanim always brought a Korban Chatos before they brought a Korban Ola. There was a Chatos brought, and then the Korban Ola. It says this in Zvachim Daf Tzadi Amid Aleph. It says in Psachim Daf Nun Tesim Abeis. If you have two Korbanos to bring, a Chatos and an Ola, bring a Chatos, and then you can bring an Ola. But here, the Ola is mentioned first. Look what it says. Tavi Keves Ben Shnaso Le Ola. Uben Yono Tor Lachatos. The Ola first and then the Chatos. In Pasuk Ches, it says, Shnebere Echod Le'ola, the Echod Lachatos. You bring the Ola before the Chatos. So it sounds like you bring the Chatos before the Ola before the Chatos, even though we know the Halacha is the opposite way. Why is it like that? Says Rashi, really, the Korban Chatos is brought before the Korban Ola. And everyone agrees, even here, Chatos is brought before. So why is the Ola first? Eino Ela Lemikra'a. Eino el lemikra'a. Now, we don't know what that means. The simple translation is only to read it. Only to read it. That's why we have it first. What in the world does that mean? Only to read it? What does that mean to read it? So the Moshe of Zakenim, another Baal Tosa, says, only to read it means when calling out the names of korbanos. To bring the korbans, you do a chatos before an ola. But says the Moshe of Zakenim, if you want to call out korbanos, first name the ola, and then name the chatas. Everybody got that? Name the ola first. Say, this is my ola. And then say, this is my chatas. Then bring the chatas. And then bring the ola. Which makes sense, right? But that's not how we paskin. The Rambam says that's not true. We call out the chatas and then the ola. Bring the chatas, bring the ola. That's how the Rambam paskins. The Gemara on Pei Tesim Abeis in Zvachim, right there, says you call out the name of the chatas and then you call out the name of the ola. So that Moshe Zakenim is arguing. There's a Tosfos, Rabbeinu Chaim, that brings down that yes, we call out the name of the chatas before the ola. But it seems to argue with the Gemara. And certainly this Moshe Zakenim could go with that Baal Tosfos, but it seems to go against everything else. The Marsha goes into this. The Mizrahi says there must be a mistake here because there's no way that somebody would paskin that way against the Gemara. The Gemara seems to be very, very clear. The Sif Zecham in the Rio Shlomo seems to say that they do this on purpose to put the Ola first in order to make you think that you would, maybe it's not necessary to call out one and then the other, but either way, it's weird. But I found the greatest pshat, the greatest pshat. In the morning, there are people that do every single one of the korbanos. You know, in the korbanos in the morning, obviously we have listed the normal korbanos that everybody brings every day. For example, we do the kior, that you wash your hands, etc., the parsha sekior. Then we do the parsha of Truma Sadeshan, getting rid of the garbage, the ashes on the Mizbeach. And then we do the Korban Tamid. The Korban Tamid is right after that. We do the whole Korban Tamid, the parsha of the Korban Tamid. And then we do the Ketores, which was brought every morning. The Ketores is there. And that's pretty much it. We go through Abaye, Ava Masadar, Seder Maracha, Libet Gamarva, Libet Abashol. We go through Abaye. And it's a really important thing to say Korbanos. There's more Korbanos to say. If a person's chayiv in a chatas, for whatever reason, he's chayiv in a chatas, you should say the parsha of a chatas that morning. If you know you did something that would be chayiv a chatas in the times of the Beis HaMikdash, for example, chas v'shalom, you forgot it was Shabbos, and on Shabbos day you woke up, and if somebody would have asked you, is it usher to turn on a light on Shabbos? You would say, it's usher to turn on a light on Shabbos. But you forgot it was Shabbos, you thought it was Sunday, and you turned on a light, you turned off a light on Shabbos. That's chayiv a chatas. You're chayiv a chatas. What do? You say the parsha of a chatas, not on Shabbos, you can't say it on Shabbos, but you say the parsha of the chatas itself. And if you learn the parsha of the chatas, it's ki'ilu you were makriv the chatas. If you're chayiv in an ola, let's say one day chatas, for some reason, you forgot to put on tefillin. You forgot to put on tefillin. It happens, you were traveling, you thought, and whatever happened, you forgot to put on tefillin. You forgot to say Kriya Shema. Kriya Shema is a mitzvah sase d'oraisa. If you mess up on a mitzvah sase and you didn't say Kriya Shema, you didn't say tefillin, okay, you got to bring a korban ola. So you got to say the parsha of the ola. So which one comes first when you got to do a parsha's ola or a parsha's chatas? What do you do then? Says the Torah Tamima, Reb Baruch Epstein, do the ola before the chatas. Even though if you were bringing korbanos, you'd bring the chatas before the ola. But when you're saying it out loud and you're doing the parshios, do the ola before the chatas. You know why? It's obvious. Because if you look at Parshas Vayikra, the ola is written before the chatas. The parsha of ola is the beginning of Parshas Vayikra. The chatas is toward the end of Parshas Vayikra. The ola comes before the chatas. So lemikra, says Rashi, when it comes to hakrava, bringing korbanos, the chatas is before the ola. When it comes to reading it, when it comes to reading the parshios, the ola is before the chatas. So says Rashi, the reason why the ola is put first is lemikra, to read it out. And maybe that's why the Shulchan Aruch says, now this is not so far in, Simen Aleph in Hilchos Orach Chaim, Sif Dalid, says when you read the parshios, you do the parshios of the ola shlamim chatas asham. In that order. Maybe that's why he does it in that order, because that's the order of Parshas Vayikra. That if you're going to read the parshios, even though I would do a chatas before an ola if I'm being makriv, first do the ola and then the chatas. And then he says even better. You know why, says the Torah to me, you know why that makes a lot of sense, aside from the korban, you know why it's different? Why is it different? If I'm makriv it this way, then I should read it this way. I don't understand why it's different. Why in the world is it different? The answer is, by a korban ola, what do you do with the animal? You strip off the skin, right? You flay the skin, you cut up the animal, you put it on top of the mizbeach, and you burn the entire thing. The skin goes to the kohanim. The rest of the animal, you got to take out the innards, you put it on the side. The animal's entirely burnt on the mizbeach. Once it finishes burning, kapara is done. You got your kapara, you received your atonement, and you're done. There's nothing else to do. What happens by a chatas? What do you do by a chatas? Well, that's different. Chatas, you also flay the skin, you get rid of the skin, you chop it up, you have it into different pieces, you take some of the innards out and you put it on the mizbeach, and the animal itself, most of the meat, is taken and given to the kohanim. What do the kohanim do with that meat? They have to eat it. You don't finish the kapara of your korban chatas until the kohen eats the part of the korban. If he doesn't eat it, there's no kapara. The kapara is you put the innards and burn it. You take the pieces and you eat it. And when you finish the eating, when the kohanim finish the eating of the chatas, that's the kapara. That means that essentially the ola and the chatas are totally different from one another. The ola, the kapara, is immediate. You say the parsha, you're done. You don't need anything else. The saying of the parsha is like the burning on the mizbeach. As soon as you say the parsha, you burn down the mizbeach. Your kapara is over, you're good. But a chatas is not finished until the kohen eats it. How in the world are you going to have the kohen eat it when you're reading the parsha? You can read the parsha and you can burn the korban chatas, but you can't get the kohen to eat it. So it's never a full kapara. Amar Rabbi Yishmael, the Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Yud Gimel. Karisi v'yitesi. One time I read a pasuk on Shabbos and I turned the lamp. You know, they had like Aladdin lamps back then. So he turned the lamp and the oil like burned the fire a little bit better. So he's chayiv achatas. Chayiv achatas and Shabbos. Kriis v'itesi. And I separated a chatas shmeina for the times of Mashiach. So when Mashiach comes, I'm going to bring a korban chatas. Everybody asks, what do you mean? Just say the parsha of the chatas. The Gemara Menachos Daf Kuf Yud says, just say the parsha and your yotzei chatas. You don't have to bring a chatas when Mashiach comes. Just say the parsha and you're done. The answer is, no, it's not enough. You can say the parsha for a chatas, but you're not done until the kohen eats it, and you can't do that through the parsha, which means you're never done. You need to bring a chatas. So anytime you're chayav a chatas, you can say the parsha, but you still need to do something different. For that reason, reading the parsha of the ola is better than reading the parsha of the chatas. The ola is a full kapara, the chatas is not. So if you want to bring it, the chatas is brought before the ola. You want to say it, the ola comes before the chatas. That is brilliant, that idea behind it. There's a Chassam Sofer here. There's a Shari Aron here that brings another three reasons. There's even a Rav Hirsch over here that's beautiful. Mamish, Svasayim Yushak, a tremendous, tremendous Rav Hirsch that explains its entire idea of what the chatas and ola stand for. But I want to say over one other part before we go on over here. There is an amazing chida over here as well. But the Tali Oros once said, he said a story over, that when Chaim Brisker was once vacationing in near Radin, the Chafetz Chaim sent one of his Talmidim to be Meshamesh Rav Chaim. Chaim Brisker is around. He told his Talmid, take advantage of the situation, go. The Talmid went to go to Rav Chaim Brisker. Rav Chaim Brisker had spent his vacation there maybe a week or two, whatever it was, right, in one of these mountainous areas. And then the Talmid came back. So you can imagine, this guy was the most popular guy. As soon as he got back, they said, oh, the guy's back. They all ran around and they said, what do you learn from Rav Chaim Brisker? So the Talmud said, I'll tell you, one time I was walking to Rav Chaim Brisker, and we were talking about a certain sugya, we were dealing with a certain sugya in Shas, and as we were learning, I said to him, Farvus, why? Why is that so? Rav Chaim looks at me, and he says the words, I'm going to say it, and I think I got it in Yiddish over here, Freknisht Farvus. Don't ask why. Nervos. What you should ask is what. You don't ask why, you ask what. That's what he told the Bachar. So the Bachar, the guy that turned to Rav Chaim Brisker and said, I don't understand. The Gemara asks why all the time. Mipnei ma amra Torah, why does the Torah say, etc. And over here also, Mipnei ma amra Torah, that you bring an ola and a chatas, what did the woman do wrong? We always ask why. We shouldn't ask why. We have to ask what. Of course we ask why. Chaim Brisker said it beautifully. But it takes work. I thought about this for 2 days. And I think I got it. I think I have the idea behind it. When it comes to the Torah asking a question on the Torah, it can ask why. When it comes to us asking a question on the Torah, we ask what. It's a very important distinction over here. Can you ask why? Yeah. But you got to know what you're asking why on. I'm asking why as in I don't believe this. I'm asking why as in this can't be, or you're asking what is the real pshat behind the Torah? What's the lesson to be learned behind it? Why? Sometimes we'll have an answer to why, sometimes we don't. The Torah has an answer to a why. Sometimes we'll have an answer, sometimes we won't have the answer. But what? What? That we can get. What does the Torah mean by that? What does the Torah want from us? What is the Torah trying to tell us? That's a really, really important thing to be able to say, that we can always understand the what behind it. We may not be able to understand the why. So when it comes to this, you're going to ask me, why does this woman have to bring it? Why does the woman bring the chatzal? I'll tell you what the Gemara says. Either it's something that's awesome, like the Das Kanim and the Sforn and the Ramban cleansing her, or it's a kapara for her, like the Ramban or the Ibn Ezra, the Tzurah Amor and Rav Moshe. Maybe it's something like that. Or it's the sin of Chava. So we're going to go with the Rabbeinu Bechaya, Rabbi Yonis and Eibshitz. We're going to go with somebody like that, maybe even the Kli Yakar, to explain what happened over there. We're going to go through the tour and the Ben Yonah. I don't understand. Why over here is the tour before the Ben Yonah? Why over there? But the point behind all of this is to get the what. Whenever you hear a Dvar Torah, it's about the what. What are you really supposed to get out of it? That's the lesson that Rav Chaim taught this Talmud. That's the lesson that this Bachar came back with, telling the Chafetz Chaim's other Talmidim. It's about the what, not about the why. Have a good Shabbos, everybody.